You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
Prime Minister Christopher Luxon has recently returned from the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in Samoa, also known as CHOGM, where one of the main topics of discussion was the impact of climate change and extreme weather events on island nations. While attending CHOGM, Chris Luxon told media and other delegates that he was concerned about rising sea levels and the pollution of water bodies in the Pacific, and that the New Zealand government was doing everything it could to combat climate change and achieve net zero emissions. Luxon's attendance at CHOGM and stated commitment to mitigating emissions and sea level rises has been at odds with environmentalists and experts who've said that the government's domestic climate and industrial policies go directly against what Luxon said in Apia, with measures such as the Fast Track Approvals Bill and reinstation of offshore gas exploration preventing New Zealand from achieving net zero emissions and contributing to the very same problems that he was discussing. For our weekly catch-up, I spoke to the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March about Prime Minister Chris Luxon's visit to Samoa for CHOGM and his defense of the government's climate policies. We also discussed a new partnership between Germany and New Zealand to combat emissions in the agricultural sector and the Green Party's call to close youth justice residences. To start off, what are the implications of our Prime Minister attending a summit like CHOGM in a Pacific island nation and telling the media that New Zealand's government was committed to combating climate change?
I think the Prime Minister is taking the public and people in the Pacific basically as ignorant people who are not aware of actually what the government is actually doing domestically. The reality is that not only do we have a government that is opening up projects for things like coal mining, but who refuses to address the biggest polluter in the country, which is our agribusinesses. And this is reflected by the fact that we don't have agriculture as part of the emissions reduction trading scheme. And so I think that's a really important thing to take note of. And I don't think anyone who actually does work on climate issues will buy the government's rhetoric on this.
Speaking to RNZ, Luxon defended his statements about New Zealand being on track to achieving net zero emissions by 2050 by saying that the government had been helping New Zealand to achieve the emissions reduction budget and that the Fast Track Approvals Bill had led to the speedy development of renewable energy projects. How would you respond to that?
Well, it's simply not true. And I think that the truth is this government is now relying on spending an absurd amount of money, basically buying carbon credits, basically paying for the pollution that they're causing. And that does very little to domestically address environmental issues, to adequately support our Pacific neighbors. And we need to be focusing on domestic policy that will actually reduce emissions. Many of these policies actually will also leave people better off. So it's things like investing in regenerative farming. It's things like investing in better public transport to reduce traffic. And it's investing on things like warmer, higher quality homes so that people don't have to spend a lot of money and electricity during winter to keep them warm.
While attending CHOGM, Luxon and Deputy Prime Minister Winston Peters announced that New Zealand would be contributing $20 million to the Pacific Resilience Facility to help Pacific island nations prepare for extreme weather events. What's your reaction to the announcement of this fund, especially considering the government's climate and industrial policies domestically?
Look, all well and fine for the government to invest in climate adaptation in the Pacific, but we also got to do our part to mitigate the impacts of climate change. And at a time where, for example, in Samoa, the government refuses to adequately compensate locals for the harm that oil spills are causing on their livelihoods, I think this government needs to do more to actually follow the science and take climate issues seriously, because for people in the Pacific, it's very much a survival issue for generations to come. It's not an abstract thing. It's something that people are already living in the now.
So going off of what you just said, Luxon's visit to Samoa for CHOGM comes shortly after the sinking of the HMNZS Manawanui. Do you think that the government's response to the sinking of the Manawanui has been adequate?
Absolutely not. And we've had the Samoan community both here and in Samoa saying that more needs to be done, including exploring issues like compensation to address the fact that people's livelihoods are being put at risk due to the sinking and the fact that we've got a food basket in Samoa being threatened by the environmental impact that the sinking of a New Zealand ship is causing in the Pacific. I mean, this is such a good example of our lack of commitment and partnership to the Pacific. And at a time where everybody's talking about power brokers trying to influence things in the Pacific, New Zealand could actually center people and communities and the environment and our diplomatic efforts to retain our relationships in the Pacific.
All right, moving on to the next topic. New Zealand and Germany recently announced a new partnership called the Alliance for the Climate Dialogue on Climate and Agriculture between New Zealand and Germany, also known as the AgriDens Project. The project aims to support the agriculture sector to tackle global agricultural greenhouse gas emissions while also enhancing production and food security. What are your thoughts on this new program, and what impact do you think it'll have on emissions in the agricultural sector?
Well, all well and fine for New Zealand to have international partnerships on issues around climate, but without the government doing its part domestically, all of these agreements become farcical and empty platitudes. Particularly when it comes to issues around agriculture, the science already is out there that we need to move to more regenerative forms of farming, that we need to support farmers, which I do want to sort of draw the distinction between farmers and agribusiness, to transition to more regenerative practices. And no amount of speeches and papers being signed will make up for the fact that our government isn't doing enough domestically to tackle climate issues.
Some of Germany's strategies for reducing agricultural emissions include things like lowering nitrogen surpluses and nitrous oxide emissions, conserving permanent grassland, and targeting greenhouse gas emission reductions in animal husbandry. Are there any policies of Germany's that you think Aotearoa could benefit from in this partnership?
I mean, look, for example, in issues in agriculture, I am sure there will be things that we'll be able to take on board. But I think there are other areas that we can learn from Germany, for example, issues around urban design that has led to far more livable cities and lower carbon cities. So, yes, there are things we can learn from our counterparts throughout the world. But at the end of the day, that requires domestic leadership, not just an international agreement signed on paper. So when we've got a government, like I said, that is opening coal mines, that is weakening environmental protection and enabling and supercharging some of the most harmful forms of farming, I think this agreement feels like empty platitudes.
And lastly, how would the Greens tackle agricultural emissions while maintaining food production and security?
Well, actually, tackling agricultural emissions will protect food production and food security because climate change will put those very same food systems at risk. For us, we've long called for having a fund to support farmers to transition to regenerative forms of practices, to also address things like including agriculture in the emissions trading scheme, and also to put better protections in our waterways, to recognize that actually our farming systems and our water systems are intricately connected and both need to be well in order for our food systems to thrive.
All right, moving on to the last topic. Last week, the Greens issued a call for youth justice residences in Aotearoa to close. This comes after seven teenagers at an Oranga Tamariki youth justice facility broke out onto the roof in protest against what they described as poor conditions. Can you tell us about why the Greens are calling for youth justice residences to close?
Yeah, I mean, I think what happened in Kōrero Waimanaki, the facility you just spoke of, isn't unique. There has been reports around the poor practices in some of those residencies, and that's deeply concerning because at the core what we've got are young people who have been failed by our political system, by our healthcare system, our mental health care system, poor quality of housing, and locking them up in effectively child prisons won't address the core drivers of the behaviors that landed young people in that place to begin with. And so this is why shutting those youth justice residencies and working to address things like housing, education, healthcare, and the ongoing breaches of timidity are going to be critical to ensure that we don't rely on putting young kids on prisons when actually the solutions lie elsewhere.
Regarding the incident at Kōrero Waimanaki, National Director for Oranga Tamariki Youth Justice Residences, Ian Chapman, said that staff worked with the youth offenders who climbed onto the roof and were able to utilize their relationship with them to successfully bring them down. Is it possible that perhaps better staff training and increased funding might be more viable than closing youth justice residences entirely?
Look, I mean, while we resource the alternatives and shut them down, of course the people working there should receive as much training and be as competent as possible to work with young people. But that does not mean that youth justice residencies in and of themselves actually support young people to be their best selves. The research actually shows the opposite, that actually military-style boot camps and these youth justice residencies don't address the core issues that land the young people in those places to begin with. And this is why greater investment on things like housing, healthcare, education are critical, so that we don't rely on child prisons. No amount of staff training will make up for the fact that prisons don't have a history of adequately rehabilitating people.
You mentioned this a little bit earlier, but what alternatives to youth justice residences are the Greens calling for, especially to deal with youth offending in the short term?
So Tamitha has been visiting alternatives that rely on more in-depth interventions at a whānau level, for example. And I think having workers that can work at a family level to address things that may be going on in the family or problematic behaviors that may be going on with the children are critical. Those require adequate investment. But they're a worthwhile investment, because actually what it means is we're not then paying millions and millions of dollars in just maintaining these child prisons. And then we have social workers working with people at the core of behavioral issues that may be happening in the family. But again, like, a lot of this also can be addressed and supported by ensuring that young people are growing up in warm, safe homes, that are receiving adequate education, and that they have access to healthcare when they need it. Because when those basic needs are not met, you have a flow-on effect where people feel disenfranchised, disconnected, and then you have the kind of behavior that may end up criminalizing people to begin with.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.